This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Cross comes in and it's there. Kwezi Appiah has equalised for AFC Wimbledon. He has silenced those fans. He is cupping those ears. It is the AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, joined by Kevin Boris of the 9 Years podcast. Kevin, you've been a busy man today.
I have. Yeah, we the 9 Years podcast were invited back to film or live stream on YouTube the Don's Trust board elections for this year, the hustings. So myself and Nick Draper, we interviewed all 8 candidates. You get 20 minutes each, quick tailored questions. We had questions from Don's Trust members sent in before. We have questions from the live audience. We have a kind of bit of a game with them where we were formed in 1889. In fact, 130 years and one day ago, the club was formed. And so we have 89 seconds of questions or rapid-fire questions. They're kind of daft. And we have our favourite bit, which is the anagram of the candidate's name. But basically, it's a good way for the Don's Trust members, of which there's 3,000 plus, they get to not only just read their manifestos, but they actually get to hear them in action. They see them in action. Because if you're being elected to represent 3,000 people, you're likely to be, maybe you have to go to a supporters direct meeting or you go to an FA meeting or something. You're going to represent the fans. So you need to be put under a bit of pressure. So we kind of ask them quite searching questions at some points and just hope they react and they give a good account of themselves, which all 8 of them did, has to be said.
Okay, well, we're going to come on to that in slightly more depth a bit later on in the show. Of course, if you are listening in, don't forget that you can watch Kevin live on YouTube.
Yes.
A cleanly shaven Kevin Boris, by the way. Is that is that purposefully because you know that you're going to be live in HD, sparkling HD?
I don't hope it's not in HD.
No.
No, it wasn't. I intend to trim it. I have there was a kind of a request. And I
a request
slight request and I trimmed it as what I thought, and then I kind of lost concentration while cutting it and I hacked a bit off. It's actually quite painful. Ended up with both of my sons with their, cause they both have beards, both of my sons with their beard trimmers working on either side evening it up, so I now have no beard, but it's very, very short. So
you should hand that razor to a certain George Jones and just have him get rid of those bits and pieces he's got around his face.
Yeah, he's cultivating it. It's like he's a human allotment. It'd be like going to his allotment and ripping out his courgettes.
Has he got courgettes?
I'd imagine if he had anything at all, it'd be courgettes.
Right, okay, wonderful. Well, like I said, this is the AFC Wimbledon fan show. If you didn't realise already, that is the voice of Kevin Boris.
Hello.
And if you'd like to talk to Kevin, you can. It's very easy to do so. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Before we move on to the Don's Trust board elections, which you've just spoken about, Kevin, we must reflect on the 1-1 draw with Lincoln City yesterday. Kwezi Appiah, as I mentioned at the top of the show, getting that late equaliser to deny Lincoln a first away win since August.
Yes.
What was the game like?
I try not to talk in cliches. I hope, whatever you think of me on the radio, I hope you don't, you realise I really make an effort to not talking football cliches.
Okay.
But yesterday was a game of two halves. It really was. And I couldn't think, I was trying to think of any other way of a game of separate periods, but it wasn't. Lincoln dominated the first half, only scored once. Mm. We completely dominated the second half, only scored once. Draw's fair.
Yeah.
I think I absolutely settled for draw. The highlight of that game was Terrell Thomas, who was superb in defence. I saw a couple of things on Facebook where people were saying he was, a lot of the time he's very good because he makes up for his own mistakes, but I think that's a bit harsh. He was excellent yesterday. Lincoln, if you'd have asked me before the kickoff, who's Lincoln's two main men, to me that would have been George Grant and Tyler Walker. George Grant was completely anonymous. I forgot he's on the pitch until he went off after about an hour. Tyler Walker had about 2 shots. So, but they had some other players. Jack Payne scored against us last year for Bradford, scored for them today, yesterday. Defensively, Jason Shackle is probably a championship player still, but he was excellent. Keeper made a couple of good saves. But it was just an even game. I mean, I'm not a betting person. Not trying to be sexist. I'm not a betting person.
We're talking about betting on the AFC Wimbledon fan show.
No, I'm not. I'm saying I'm not.
I'm kidding, mate.
No. I would put money on, if I was that person, that Wimbledon and Lincoln finish within 5 points of each other end of the season. We're pretty even. The only issue with them is they do play good football when they can be bothered, but they spend so much time lying on the ground. And just the dark arts. Lincoln have mastered the dark arts. The Cowley brothers are kind of held up as being what a great pair of blokes. Yeah, they're lovely blokes. But they really have schooled Lincoln in the dark arts of shirt tugging and then falling over, elbowing a player and then falling over. Mm. Michael Appleton has come in. I presume Appleton got that job because he was happy to continue that. Another manager might have gone in and said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to play better football, like whatever. But, yeah, Lincoln are the new Wickham for me. Wickham have stopped falling over. If you could see Matt's face now, it'd be great.
No, just intrigued as to what you're going to say. Because Wickham obviously are a top of League One as things stand.
They are top of League
Quite
One.
Incredibly so.
Yeah, but they Wickham, you ask anybody who's been in League One, League Two the last few seasons, Wickham infuriate other teams with their diving and, I'm going to say the word cheating, pretending they're injured, wasting time. They didn't do it this year. I'll give Gareth Ainsworth credit. They didn't do it this season. Lincoln have taken the mantle. So there's always one team I like to dislike in any division, and I'm afraid. My friend Dino Hendy is listening. Wimbledon fan, lives in Lincoln. He's going to get abuse tomorrow. He's a drummer, so he may not be going to. He doesn't go to an office, but if he's recording tomorrow, he'll get some stick tomorrow. Because I'm going to say Lincoln are the new Wickham, and I'm not impressed with their tactics whatsoever. But when they played football, they were pretty good.
Dino Hendy. Well,
yeah.
If you're listening, Dino, get in touch.
He is listening.
708-7020-558. Well, great. Perhaps he can play us a little ditty with the drums as he comes on air.
Well, I'll ask him. He's just messaged me. So, yes. Cheers, Dino.
Perfect.
I'm not going to read out what he said.
Well, it is funny as well, isn't it? Because when you look at that run of Lincoln, still without an away win since August. I mean, that came during a three successive winning streak at the start of the season. It's eight games now without a win on the road. I mean, you say that Wimbledon did deserve the draw.
Yep.
You mentioned the two goalkeepers as well, of course. Was it a tale of two keepers, in a sense?
Not particularly. It was a tale of...
I mean, Josh Vickers, a great save from Mitch Pinnock, of course.
Yeah.
A bit late on, and Nathan Trott, we know, is highly rated.
Nathan Trott made probably three or four good saves. I'd say Vickers made three. But no, it wasn't really a tale of good keepers. It was probably a tale of defences being on top. They said Shackle was excellent. I can't remember the name of the player that was alongside him. I've lost count with. I've been so tired after today. But Shackle and his defensive colleagues were very, very good. Paul Callanby was excellent. Terrell Thomas was fantastic. Ryan Delaney went off just after half time. Luke O'Neill came on. He's normally a right back or right wing back. Played him on the right side of a three centre halves. He was excellent. So pivotal sub,
by the way, because he obviously delivered
the
goal.
Cross. All three of Kwesi Appiah's goals this season have been from headers from Luke O'Neill crosses. Mm. It's the new Morata and Azpilicueta. I mean, Azpilicueta made half of Morata's goal.
Yeah, six or seven goals in that particular season. They almost created a new method of the cross as well, because it wasn't your archetypal swing them in. It was a very bizarre, Azpilicueta would almost clip it in to kind of the penalty spot where Morata would peel off and head in.
Well, if you saw Kwesi's goal yesterday, that's exactly what
it was.
Absolutely. A left-footed clip from a right-footed player. Kwesi not... But this season, not. I can't remember him scoring with his head. And this season, he's only scored with his head. But yeah, it was thoroughly deserved. We probably should have scored earlier. It's an odd thing because it was only a point in early November, but it felt like a really important point. I think because Lincoln were doing their utmost. People now say utmost. It drives me nuts. Their utmost to hold on to those points by whatever means, fair or foul, largely foul. It just felt like we deserved that. Football triumphed. Yesterday, and I it's not often you say that about our team, to be fair.
Football was the winner.
I think football was the winner.
You said you weren't a man of cliches, Kevin Boras.
Well, I try and avoid them, but I've got a pound on me. So it's a 50p cliche. I've used them up. I won't do another one.
I do want to talk about the cupping of the years, because I find this one quite interesting. I don't particularly buy it. I don't endorse it, because I think if a player is performing week in, week out to a very good standard, that player... If he's a striker, is scoring week in, week out, and he's still getting abuse, fair enough. Cup your ears. Point to your name on the back of your shirt. But if that's not happening, I just think you get on with your football, because you're sort of cupping your ears to fans going, see? It's like, well, see what? What do you want to say? Yes, you scored a goal. That's what you're there to do as a striker. So don't start giving it the Johnny Biggin now because you scored a goal. And listen, brilliant goal from Kwesi. Mm. Great to see him on the score sheet. You want him to produce, but come on, you can't be cupping your ears.
No, Kwesi is... He's that unfortunate type of player where he's just he looks like he's not trying as hard as he could. Now, I'm not suggesting that is the case, but there are, look at Mathieu Letizia. He could have done so much more in his career, but what a player he was, didn't need to try any harder. Kwesi is that kind of languid kind of, yeah, okay, I'll close him down in a minute. And he doesn't quite get there. He's been injured a lot. Last season, he was injured a lot. The season before, he was injured even more. He kind of came back for the West Ham of the Fleetwood game in the FA Cup last year away. Fantastic performance. Everyone says this guy's a championship player. And that was the one game he's played for us in which he was a championship player. So almost 3 years, he's had one fantastic game. Played very well against West Ham. Injured, missed the next three or four games. Came back for the Millwall game. Injured. He seemed to only pick a right time to play when he fancied playing. Probably not true. So he's that kind of player that divides opinion. Some people just think, whatever he does, he's going to be rubbish. And other people kind of a bit more sort of, well, when he's good, he's good. When he's bad, I'll criticise him if I need to. But his problem is his own public persona, because he's on Twitter, and if you say anything about him, he'll block you. He has blocked literally hundreds of people. He just recently blocked the 9 Years podcast because they said, Kwesi, you haven't blocked us yet. So he blocked them. Now they've blocked him. It's quite amusing. So he blocks people just randomly.
Hang on a second. Sorry.
Yeah.
Kwesi Appiah blocked the 9 Years podcast.
Yes.
Because the 9 Years podcast said, you haven't blocked us yet.
This is correct, yes.
And as a result, in response to him blocking the 9 Years podcast, the 9 Years podcast have blocked Kwesi.
Yes, it's true.
But what a world we live in.
It is, isn't it? But if you look at Kwesi's Twitter, he's blocked so many people. And it's so that doesn't help him at all. He has a poor game. He missed four or five games for us. Next thing, he's on a plane to Ghana, playing for Ghana in the African Cup of Nations qualifier. And you think, well, okay, yeah, I understand you want to represent your country. I totally get that, because he was top scorer in the African Cup of Nations a few years ago. So we know he's got it there. But how are you now fit enough to fly to Africa, play for Ghana, come back, and then you're injured again? You don't play. He missed six games, but played once for Ghana. So that kind of winds people up. His public persona, his Twitter persona is not great. And then, of course, about half an hour before Wally Downs got removed from position, he tweeted a pair of sort of goggly eyes and an egg timer. And you think, why are you doing that? Mm. You know full well that people are going to start having a go at you because you're... And that was before Wally got sacked. So clearly some people knew what was going to happen. We all kind of guessed, but we didn't know. Why would you do that? If for example, Luke O'Neill did that, or... I don't know, I'm trying to think of a player that everyone loves. Anthony Hartigan did it. People think, I wonder what he's doing that for. Mm. But when Kwesi does it, he's got no leeway whatsoever. He's going to be public enemy number two or three, always, regardless of what he does. He just has to accept it. Because if he's that sort of selfish kind of person, he can say, well, you pay to watch me play. He earns decent money. We know kind of what Kwesi earns, and I would be happily having that. A month, right, a week.
So you do know how much he's earning?
I've got a 99.99% idea, yes.
Okay, because we have had a tweet in, or a WhatsApp, I should say.
From Mr. K. Appiah.
It's got his bank statement there.
Yeah.
No, from Mod Womble, who tends to WhatsApp in these days. He said, Appiah scores, but still not the hero. Anyone bagging the wages that he suggested a week from us needs to perform well week in, week out. That's fair enough. I've also been corrected by Mark Hendricks. I am not aware of this, so it is my apology, Mark. I'm sure you're going to revel in that apology. But he has said the fact that Saturday's match feels like a win is because previously we would have folded and lost. However, he said Kwesi cupped his ears at the away fans. I was not aware of that. I did think it was towards the home fans.
I'm not sure. I as where I stand, I haven't seen that far corner in 17 years. I've only seen it on the Quest highlights. I thought he was cupping his ears towards the home fans too. I've got to be honest, having seen that, because Scott Wagstaff made a shushing gesture at the Lincoln fans. Lincoln fans were apparently throwing stuff at Wags as he was going up and down the wing. Also threw stuff at Paul Ossu in the first half. So no racism. They're just chucking stuff at people.
That's football supporters giving players abuse.
It is, yeah. So you give it back when you've made the goal. Kwesi wasn't getting abuse from the Lincoln fans. He's only on the pitch 9 minutes, and at which time he touched the ball once. Mm. So Kwesi on the pitch 9 minutes did two things: one foul, one goal. So I don't know if he's cupping his ears at the Lincoln fans. I'm not quite sure why. I also thought I'm not suggesting Mark is right and you're wrong, whatever. But I'm with you on this one. I think he was cupping his ears at our fans. It appeared to be, because that's where he gets a lot of stick from that behind that goal. So yeah, but whatever. He's not really in a position to do that.
Hmm. Good debate to continue on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
I think all the subs that came on, and they have done in recent games, the subs that come on, they've been fantastic. I mean, Luke O'Neill's put the cross in, and, you know, Quezzy's obviously finished it. And I thought Shane come on and made a difference as well. So, you know, we're saying it's a squad game. We've got to start 11. We can only put three on. But, you know, they've got to be ready. Anthony Antigone started again, hasn't played for a while, but come in and said. So people are getting opportunities, and we're, you know, obviously looking to keep the shirt. So, you know, it's a nice problem to have, but you know, everyone played their part.
It's a squad game. It's a nice problem to have. That's straight out of the Kevin Borras cliche.
I think Glenn owes us about £4 from that alone. But he's right, though. He made one sub he had to make, with Delaney going off. But the sub he brings on to play right side of a three-man defence makes the goal with a left-footed cross. And, it, you know, it's one of those things. You can bring three players on and they all have absolute nightmares. And he brought on those two players. And Shane McLaughlin did come on. That's the best Shane McLaughlin's played probably since March. He's one of those players, again, that just kind of played well the first two games he played and then didn't. I'm not going to go into that. But, yeah, that was a good performance. And you bring three subs on and they all make a difference. It's the kind of thing that a manager in his second game, or his first game as permanent manager, gets right. Mm. And a manager going through a bad spell gets wrong. It's just luck, isn't it?
And that was his first game as well as permanent manager. So the show is officially on the road now. It's official.
It is, yeah. I mean, we're all of a certain age, those of a certain age who remember seeing Glyn's first game as a 17-year-old in October 1980 against York City.
Were you there?
I certainly was, yeah. Wally Down's first game, also against York City, in May 79. So I'm old enough to see both of those players. And they're now 57 and 58, both grandparents. And it makes you feel very old.
Makes you feel very old.
It does, yeah. Well, yeah. Not you. Yeah. You're much younger than me. But Glyn is one of those players. Everyone admired Wally as a player because he didn't have a huge amount of talent but worked really hard. So you kind of admire Wally Downs as a player, but you love Glyn Hodges as a player because he just had that extra bit of skill and I don't know what it was about him. He's great on the ball, fantastic. He's one of those left-footed players. Right-footed players don't play like left-footed players. It's like a different type of leg somehow. But he was just a fantastic player, played for Wales and was just a great player for us. Left before the season before the cup run, left in 87.
My first memories of Glyn Hodges are that first season in the Premier League. That was the first time I really saw him when he was at Sheffield United and scored some great goals, scored a good lob over the head of Peter Schmeichel. I can recall, I think it was the fifth round of the FA Cup for Sheffield United against Manchester United. And he scored a great goal on either the penultimate or the last day of the season at the City Ground against Forest, which ultimately sent them down. So yes, he had that wand of a left foot, like you said, just offered something a little different. Yes, in terms of your foot, to a right-footed player, but you could just tell there was something slightly different about him.
There was, and if he can bring that kind of flair to his management skills, it'll be great. And he's got a fantastic CV. I mean, people talk about CVs now. If you look at this Glyn Hodges coaching CV, it's fantastic. Manchester City, with Wales, Stoke, I think Fulham, QPR, as you said, Nottingham Forest, Barnsley. Much, much bigger clubs than we are. So he's taken a real step down, really. Maybe he wouldn't have come for any other club. He still lives in the north. So his wife and kids and his grandkids up there. So it's a big thing for him to wrench himself away. And he did that to be with Wally, to be Wally's assistant. So when Wally left, I would have put my house on, again, not gambling, on him going with him. Because I think they came as a package and they haven't. And I don't know what the club have done. Whoever, I presume Joe Palmer, has done a great job in keeping Glyn. Because I just thought, well, he's going to go as well. I'm going to have to get a new manager in. But he's a popular person. He's not the divisive character Wally is. Whatever you think of Wally Downs, he's a divisive character. He's a divisive character as a person and a player and a manager. That's just a fact. The same way that Neil Warnock is.
Okay.
You could love Neil Warnock. I actually quite like Neil Warnock. I'm kind of a grudging respect for him. But there are people that don't like him, right? I'm sure there's probably some people who don't like Jurgen Klopp. But Klopp seems to be one of those universally popular people, doesn't he? So Wally doesn't have that.
Not with everybody.
Not with everybody, no, it's true, but with a lot of people. But I think Glyn could be one of those universally popular managers because there's no one, he's not done anything to dislike at any point in his career. He left us on good terms, he's come back on good terms, he started off well, he speaks really well, he's a friendly guy, he kind of comes across really well. I'm really excited by him. I don't get excited by much these days. But
do you think that, I mean, you mentioned that it was luck, those substitutions. Yes, he's brought on three substitutions and, you know, they've played a part in the goal. But do you really think that is luck, or do you think that's a sign of how things tactically might change under Glyn Hodges?
Both. I think, because he could have put on Luke O'Neill yesterday at right-sided centre-half, and he doesn't go forward at that moment. Kwesi could have not made that run. That's where the luck is. You know, the players know what they're supposed to be doing. And Shane McLaughlin could have come on and had a horrific game like he did the week before. But that's there's not much Glyn can do about how well Luke O'Neill plays when he comes on the pitch to play right-sided centre-half, because that's not his position. We ended up with this kind of strange, slightly skewed five-man defence at the end. But it was odd. You couldn't look at you. It's like a slanted back four with Luke O'Neill slightly further forward. It was a strange decision, but it worked. So there is a bit of luck. There's obviously skill, because Glyn knows what he's doing. We've got Nick Dawes, who's come in as his assistant manager, who was our director of recruitment. He's managed Scunthorpe and Rotherham, so he knows what he's doing as well. Between them, they were plotting for some time. I stand quite near the dugout, and they were talking for quite some time about, so pointing at things, looking at paper, looking at other things, talking to players, talking to Vaughan Ryan, and it just seemed that they were planning something, and it worked. But just as simply, that could have not have worked. So that's where the luck comes into it. But yeah, making those subs was not let's quickly get him on. They were planning that. So. Great. I actually don't care whether it was luck or not, because we got a deserved point, and it got us out of the bottom three. That's important. It dumped that other team from up the M1 into the bottom three. They sacked their manager. What an afternoon. Within 3 or 4 minutes, we're losing, and then they lose, we win, their manager gets sacked, and everything's kind of like, well, that's not a bad Saturday evening.
Happy days. We've had another WhatsApp in from Mod Womble, who did say that the creative spark of Max Sanders was missed yesterday. He's actually said that he believes that Sanders, obviously on loan from Brighton, is the better loan signing than Marcus Force from Brentford. Would you agree? That's three games without a goal now. George Jones's prediction of Marcus Force hitting double figures before the year is out, slightly under threat. It looks like he'll still get there.
I think he'll do that. That's a good point. I think they are... Obviously, if you look at statistics, Force has got 7 goals in 9 games now.
Yeah.
So you'd say, well, he's the better. But Max Sanders is top quality. I agree. The fact that you've got Marcus Force on loan from a championship club, Sanders has come from a premiership club, and they obviously rate him because they gave him a new contract and then he came. Same with Force. I would say at the moment, Force is slightly tipping it because he's got those goals. But yeah, I think Sanders is very close behind him, very close. I don't know what it is about Max Sanders, but he seems to have like a force field around him. You give him the ball, there's no one near him. You give the ball to Anthony Hardigan, 3 players are on him. I don't know whether it's just the speed of movement or speed of thought, where Hardigan receives the ball at his feet and turns, where Sanders is already half turning with the ball. And it's the training. If you've been at Brighton the last 4 or 5 years, you've had better quality coaching. That's not unpleasant or unfair on our coaching. Premier League coaches get paid a lot more. They are better coaches. So I would not disagree with him, but I think at the moment it's Marcus Force is just tipping the balance for the goals.
To quickly answer your question, or to perhaps chime into that debate, I think a lot of it is positional awareness in the case of Max Sanders. It's first touch as well. You'd be surprised how often a first touch can completely open up space for a player who's just a couple more levels above, like Max Sanders is. Obviously, he is on loan from Brighton. Jason Malumbi on loan at Millwall from Brighton as well. And they really, really rate him, because Brighton have got a lot of good young players. We've seen that Aaron Connolly as well. He's coming through that system now and doing well in the Premier League. But yes, I think it just is that level above. Sometimes it's that footballing brain that affords them the space. We're going to move on to the Don's Trust Board elections next on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Stay with us.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
It's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with Kevin Boras of the 9 Years podcast. We're with you through to 9 p.m. this evening, so about 29 minutes to go. Kevin, I'm going to open up this section with a question we've had from Molesy Don on Twitter. Kevin, do you think our lack of a Moneybags chairman means we don't have influence and sway with the EFL, FA and match officials? Slightly controversial, Molesy Don. Also, do potential players see us as a second-rate club as we are fan-owned and they know money will be tight? Just sometimes, says Molesy Don, I feel we are not respected.
The first point, I think we have to say no, that's not the case, don't we?
Categorically no, right?
Yeah. and move on from the question. I understand the motive of the question, but I don't mean to say that. Question: the second part of the question is yeah, probably. I think if a player has the choice of coming to us, knowing that we have a ceiling and we have a small, everyone knows about the budget. You can go on to, you can Google football club budgets in League One and see where we come, right? Mm-hmm. If you had a choice of coming to us or going to a League Two side with a bigger budget, and you didn't have that much ambition as a player, you just kind of fancied the money, you'd go somewhere else, wouldn't you? Mm. Would you go to Crawley? Have they got more money than us? Maybe not. Or you'd go to, clearly Plymouth. Plymouth have got money, right? So you'd go to Plymouth. Plymouth is a cheaper place to live. So if you're from Scotland, kind of Plymouth have quite a few Scottish players, did do. If you're playing in a Scottish championship, Plymouth come in for you, Wimbledon come in for you, where are you going to go? It's just cheaper. Wimbledon's a bit.
Do you know what, though?
That part of London is a very expensive part of London to live in, and we can't compete with wages. So, yes, probably.
But it is in London. Plymouth is most definitely not.
No.
Plymouth, as things stand, are in League Two.
Yes, they are.
AFC Wimbledon are in League One. Like you said, it is all about motive. And players do have to factor this in now. They have to factor in where they are in their career. Family commitments, mm-hmm. You know, how many kids they've got. They have to look at schooling, yeah. Mm. And they do have to look at money. You are correct. But ultimately, for a lot of footballers, especially younger footballers, it is about getting as high up in the game as you possibly can. As soon as you can. And the lure of London, regardless mm-hmm. of where Wimbledon is in London, in terms of that yeah. more affluent area, mm-hmm. I suppose, I think that the bright lights of the big smoke would be more of a draw than Plymouth for some footballers.
I think it would, but if you look at some of the players that Plymouth have got in, you look at Danny Mayer from, I know because he went with Ryan Lowe, right? Mm-hmm. Danny Mayer, I think he's one of the better players in the lower two divisions. He had the chance to come to a couple of League One clubs. He had a chance to go to Ipswich, apparently, and chose to go to Plymouth, maybe because he's happy with Ryan Lowe and three of the other Bury players came with him. But really, he's still playing in League Two. He's easy to, I've seen him play 10, 15 times, and he's a championship player, with at least. And he's chosen to go to Plymouth. There are players who choose to go to smaller clubs or lower clubs, or we've lost out to clubs in the conference or national league before because we can't afford to pay their wages. And if you're buying a house, you want to buy a house. If you've got 200 grand to spend on a house, right, you could buy a nice house in Plymouth, in Wimbledon or any of that sort of area within like an hour of the training ground, you might be able to buy a one-bedroom flat. And people, and if they've got kids, then yeah, well, why would you want to have a small flat when you could have a nicer house, maybe a nicer lifestyle? I get it. Football, people forget that football is a human. And people, I think once people kind of realised that with us when Danny Kedwell left us and went to Gillingham, because A, he wanted to see his, he wanted to take his kid to school. Hmm. And he had to get up so early in the morning to go from Medway, or Medway towns where he lived, or Rochester, I think he lived in Raynham, to go from Raynham to New Malden for training. He couldn't take his kid to school, and his kid was about to start school, and he wanted to do it himself. Because that's a human being's thing. Take your kid to school. Lovely. Now his kid's a lot older, he doesn't do it. Now he's obviously playing for Havant at Waterlooville. So I think people just thought, yeah, well, I would do that. Put yourself in their position. What would you do? Mm. So it's difficult, and I understand that most of us who are watching football would love to play football for a living, be paid for it. But to some of them, it is their job. So I think players do look at us and think, yeah, they're fan-owned, they won't have enough money, I'll go somewhere else. But the other ones might think, well, they haven't got that much money, maybe they'll pay me as much as they can and put me in the shop window, and they're a well-known club and people that were on TV a fair bit, and I'll get noticed and sold. And maybe that's the way to go. But I think it's a very good question.
Very good question. Thank you for that, Molesey Don. A very, very good question.
I don't know whether I answered it or not, but I think the answer...
I think there or thereabouts you got there, because actually...
part two, yes, is the answer.
And conversely, when a player is also coming to the end of his career as well, that's where a decision has to be made. And you meet a lot of footballers who are in their 30s and they go, do you know what? I know it's my last contract, so this is not about football whatsoever. Spoken to a lot of footballers who have said that. Not about football. It is all about money. And fair play to them, because the career finishes on average, what, at the age of 35, between the age of 33, 35. Russell Martin, of course, 33. He's taken a job today for a certain club who sacked their manager yesterday. So, you know, times are certainly changing nowadays. Right, we are going to move on, my friend, to the Don's Trust Board elections. Like you said, you're a bit worn out today. It's been quite the busy one.
quite a busy day. So, yeah, so Nick Draper and I, we interviewed all eight candidates for the five positions on the Don Strauss board. Our colleague Mark Hendricks did the filming and was involved in the sound, and basically Mark does all the technical stuff.
The production man.
He was a production director. And then George Jones, who obviously you've been on the show many, many times now, which is why I'm on tonight, you give him a rest. So we've rested George. It's like a rotus, it's a squad system.
Any cake, by the way? Did Mark provide any cake for the
masses? No, did you eat it last time?
Apparently I did, yeah.
Okay, was it
German apple cake?
German apple cake, yeah. It's Apfelkuchen.
Excuse me?
Apfelkuchen, I believe.
What'd you call me?
I was just remarking on the cake. I've called you other things before. And then George was on the questions. Normally Stuart Deakins is on as well, but Stuart is ill, but he was well enough to play FIFA at 5 o'clock this morning and send us pictures of him scoring a goal. I mean, I don't know how ill that is. So George is on the questions, and we had eight candidates come in. There's five places up for grabs. And there were two existing board members who were re-standing, Jane Lonsdale and Mark Davis, who's the current chairman. Edward Leake was also standing. He's been co-opted onto the board. He's an accountant, and all the accountants got voted off last time. So there's him as well. Tim Hillier, who was on the board until the last time, he's re-standing again, and four new candidates who hadn't stood before. So Mark Sturgis was one of those people who phones in regular.
He does. Bognor.
So Mark from Bognor. And we had Anne Williams, and we had Graham Stacey, and Dennis Lowndes, who has stood before but never hasn't. I don't think he's been on the board. But Dennis is very heavily involved in the ladies' team, who won 2-1 today in the against Brislington. I had never heard of that place. It's near Bristol.
Okay.
So well done to the ladies. We tailored questions. They're kind of the similar kind of questions for all of them, which is what do you do? What do you bring to the table? This metaphorical table. And how will you change the Don's Trust for the better? But we're asking different questions. And then we have members have had about a month now to send in questions to ask. And then during the course of the programme, which is broadcast live on YouTube, people can then write in with their own questions. There's some interesting questions, some very pointed questions. Some were just general. Some were pointed at particular people.
So members have sent in questions to you over a period of time.
Yeah.
At specific people that they want to ask those questions to.
If it's general, just say a general question. If you want to ask a specific question to a specific person, you can.
Nice.
Thorough. Yeah. Some of them did. So currently, those videos are available on YouTube, but as two big sessions before lunch and after lunch. We didn't film the lunch, but that's a bit much. And then by the end of probably 2 or 3 days' time, between Nick and Mark, they'll divide up each one, so there'll be eight separate videos, and that's when voting opens tomorrow. And then you can go on, and then you'll just people can view all eight, if you want to look at all eight over a certain period of days, and then that will help you decide on who you vote for. Voting papers have gone out. Some people still want papers. They've gone out. Some people got theirs yesterday, amazingly. And then the rest will be out this week. And then you'll get an email with your choice. And you can choose up to five candidates. Interestingly, I've mentioned this so often now. But last year, there was 11 candidates. Nine of them were able to take part in the videos. Two were unavailable, and we did them audio only. But if you look at the results of those 11 candidates, the YouTube videos' views were exactly mirrored. So I think it played a big part last year. It's the first time we'd done it. Social media getting bigger and bigger, more and more influential. And the ones that had better and slightly more engaging social media campaigns did really well. The ones that made videos did really well. The ones that didn't and just maybe hoped that their personalities or their previous record would be enough, it wasn't. Mm. And it's interesting. And that I get that. There's two or three candidates this year that we know of who would have stood had we not been doing the videos, had we not been doing the hustings. They just didn't want to do it. They didn't want to be put in front of a camera and have to be asked questions.
So how imperative then is it to be able to stand in front of a camera? In terms of the wider picture of what the job and the role will entail, how imperative is it to be able to speak in front of a camera? Could those candidates, like you said, who decided not to take part, potentially possible that the trust, have missed a trick because they didn't want to take part?
Possibly, but it is such a big part of being what is basically an elected official.
Mm.
If you elected your MP and you'd never seen them and you'd never heard them, but you had a bit of paper that said what they were like.
I agree, yeah.
But then you went to see them at the town hall and they were terrible, or said, I don't really want to do this, and sent somebody else, you think, why can't you just tell me what's going on? It's not suggesting for a minute that anyone's got anything to hide, but that's what politics has become, isn't it? And then I know there was a couple of other candidates who said, I don't want to do this, it's a personality contest. Well, yeah, it kind of is. I mean, diehard Tories, diehard Labour supporters, diehard Lib Dems who will only vote for that party. But there's a huge amount of people who are kind of floating and vote for the person they like. The one that comes to their house and is the nicest person. And how did Donald Trump become president of the USA if it wasn't through personality? It wasn't through policy, was it? So I'm not comparing Jane Lonsdale with Donald Trump. But what I'm saying is people like Jane and people like Mark and they like all the candidates and they will vote for the ones they like. I'm not choosing those two. I'm not preferential treatment. I'm just saying that people like those people. They're already on the board. And people who like Tim Hillier will vote for Tim Hillier. Of course they will. Mm. But they've got the chance now to vote for five people. So last year was four, this year five. And it could be there's a completely new board, so the four from last year and five this year. Who knows? But that's the board has to kind of go with the times, and it reflects the fan base. It's the body that reflects our views as the club and as the fans, and that's what they're there to do. So you do have there's currently three women on the board out of nine, so maybe there'll be five next time. Who knows? But you look at the fan base, you look at the shift in fans. Women to men, we've got quite a lot of female fans. You're looking at it, I don't know what the percentage is. The only thing we don't have is any kind of we don't have any BAME candidates, but none stood. So sure. we can't take any flack for that. None stood. We have a lot of black fans. We have a lot of Asian fans who could have stood if they wanted to. They'd be more than welcome to do that, but they didn't. So I don't think we can be criticised for that in terms of diversity. It is.
You haven't received any criticism for that,
no,
right?
We haven't. We haven't. But I could see that some point someone said, well, it's an entirely white board. Yeah, but it's purely coincidental. And those are the people that voted. The people that voted and those are the ones that stood. So we want to thank everyone who stood and as for this time. Everyone who stood down last time. So Jane and Mark re-standing. Colin Dipple and Roger Evans who decided not to re-stand. And Cormac van der Herven who... what's a nice way of putting this? Didn't re-stand.
Great name.
Yes, Cormac's great. Not many board members. Did you see him being crowd surfing at Southend? Cormac's very light. It's very easy to crowd surf him. But he didn't stand this time. I think he meant to, but he didn't.
Right. Okay.
So I want to publicly, on behalf of the podcast and everybody, really, to thank them for the work they've done.
Good stuff. And all in all, an enjoyable day. I mean, it must be quite a nice thing as a Wimbledon fan, an AFC Wimbledon fan for such a long time to be involved in this process.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you're seeing the inner workings of the club. The club, David Charles, who's the operations director, got up early this morning, unlocked the building for us to come in. We used the president's lounge. We had free coffee. We could have possibly, if we'd leaped over the bar, we could have got beer. We didn't bother with that. But it's just a good thing to do. John Dolan from the working group, he was there for the whole day as well. He was showing people in. So we had a holding room. The boardrooms use a holding room so people can sit down and listen to what's going on. Obviously, they can watch what's going on. So it's a proper club thing. You do feel like it's a good thing. We've donated our entire day for it, which is fantastic. But the Don's Trust board members donate 20, 30 hours a week every week for 2 years to do this. So it's what we've done is kind of nothing, really.
Excellent. Kevin Boris, thank you for that rundown. Comprehensive, to say the least.
Good. I'm happy that you feel that.
This is the AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport. Next up, we're going to have the classic Kevin Lone Watch and also look ahead to the FA Cup clash with Doncaster next week.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio. Oh yeah, it's time for Kevin's Lone Watch.
Crikey, there it is. It is time
it's
for...
Oh
yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
Kevin's Lone Watch on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. We've got about 9 minutes left. Kevin, Lone Watch, go for it.
Yeah, well, two of them are back. So next time I do it, it's going to be much, much shorter. So Ayub Assal has come back from Met Police, from his loan there. The report was he's several levels above us. So that's great. Though he's only just turned 17. Very tiny little guy. He's only about 5'3". He can very quite slight. but very, very strong, very good player, good prospect. Jack Rodoni was on loan at Tonbridge. He's back. He was on the bench yesterday. Didn't know he'd come back, but he was on the bench yesterday.
Didn't know he'd come back? Had that not been reported by the club? Or?
No, not as far as I saw. First time I known he was back was when I thought, was he running up and down the touchline? And he was back. So that's. But he did very well there. Tommy Wood has had his loan at Leatherhead extended. I think he's scored like 7 or 8 goals already. So he'll be there for an extra month. And Zach Robinson and Reuben Collins are still at Basingstoke. But the good thing was that four of those came back for the Youth Cup match on Tuesday because they can still play for us in the Cup games. So they've done very well. They've come back, and from people I know who've seen them play, they look bigger and better and stronger for the loan. So it's working out really well. And talking of the under-18s, they beat Leighton Orient 5-0 in the Youth Cup on Tuesday in front of a good crowd at Kings Meadow. And yesterday they beat them 10-0 in the league. So under-18s doing very, very well. Obviously, that path from the under-18s to our first team is very, very... It's a short path. Mm. You can divert and go off and not make it. But they look at the likes of Paul Osu and Paul Callanby and Jack Madeline and Jack Rodoni now, and they just see that path is there. Mm. If you're at Arsenal and you're 17 years old, unless you're Emile Smith Rowe, you might play occasional Europa League game. You're not going to get in the side. But with us, you can see that the players they've worked with last year are in the first team, playing away at the Stadium of Light. So it's a great thing for them.
Great video, by the way, on Twitter this week as well. James Pearce, obviously the lead youth phase coach, I believe. Splendid titles at AFC Wimbledon, by the way.
It's good, isn't it?
So many people involved in that academy set up. I saw that he and Bezo, the goalkeeper coach, worked together and had the academy goalkeepers do a session with the seniors.
Yes.
And that's awesome. Because as young and aspiring goalkeepers, regardless of whether you're at a club, if you're hoping to even be at a club, just to see that and see the interaction between the two and the fact that they were involved in that little setup just for a little bit is really good to see.
It is good. But as I think that's why maybe if you're a 28-year-old professional coming to us, might be a bit of a come down. They're not sure about the fan ownership. But if you're 14 and you've got the chance of going to Arsenal, Tottenham or us, a lot of them will choose to come to us because they can see that path. It's simple. You do well, you play well, you get to 16, 17 years old, Hull might come and buy you. We've lost 2 goalkeepers to Hull. It hasn't really worked out for either of them, unfortunately. But so you've got that chance of proving yourself, leaving the club, going somewhere else, going somewhere bigger. Or you go out on loan and play good quality football in the lower divisions, in lower league football, in the Ryman Premier League or the Southern League or wherever. Or if you are the really, really good ones, you get to play in the first team. It's great. It's not like in the distance. You can just about see the first team playing 15 pitches away, a few helicopter rides away. But you can the first team train next to them.
Yeah,
and it's
important.
That probably does happen in a lot of other clubs, but I don't see that happen in other clubs. I don't see other clubs. So I think the youth team doing well. So won the last 2 games 15-0. The players are coming back fit and strong. Ladies team are winning. The first team are being a lot harder to beat and we're playing better football. The atmosphere appears to be a bit more fun and a bit more sort of jovial and people are laughing and joking again. It just seems like a nice place to be again. And it's what we do. It's what we look forward to during the course of the week. Wake up Monday morning and think, oh, well, Saturday coming. No? And we've got this Saturday coming. We've got Doncaster in the FA Cup. That's my segue. It's something to look forward to rather than thinking, oh, no. What's going to happen? Is there going to be any problems? Are we going to have problems with fans arguing with each other? Are we going to be watching some turgid football? No, we're going to be watching some attacking football with the intent to win the game. Thank you.
Absolutely. Done. And it is the FA Cup, like you said, with Doncaster this Saturday. Now, we had a caller on the League One post-match fan show. So it's a catchy title that on Saturday
it's
evenings
very good, isn't it?
Here on Love Sport from Scunthorpe, who was quite scathing of the FA Cup and said he had no interest in going to Scunthorpe's game. I think they've got Crawley, which on one aspect I can understand. It's a fellow League Two side that you're playing. It's a pretty dull fixture. You want to just kind of get out of that relegation zone. It's not a relegation zone, but a relegation scrap. Only one team, of course, going down from League Two this season. But it is Doncaster. It is a fellow League One side. Yep. They came from behind twice yesterday to draw with Burton. Mm. You yourself, as the FA Cup, do you buy into the magic? Do you enjoy it?
Magic... I think that probably went out with Christmas. But, I still look forward to the FA Cup. I mean, look at last year. We had Haringey away in the first round, live on the TV. Terrible game of football. But it was a real turning point because the Don's Trust board, Hustings were the following day, nearly largely left on Monday. It's kind of a big weekend. Then we had Halifax away in the next round, and that was on TV. And then we had Fleetwood away, which is a fantastic performance. It's one of the best performances as AFC Wimbledon so far. That was fantastic. And then, of course, we had West Ham when we won that game. And it was
incredible run of games on TV.
Yeah. And then Millwall, which was a bit of a disappointment. But that was a fantastic... I know people say the cup can be a distraction, but I think how well we played in that FA Cup just proved to everyone, look, we've got that, we can do this. And that kind of was a bit of a catalyst for the rest of the season, I think. It was a bit of a disappointment getting Doncaster. No disrespect to them whatsoever, but we've got them in the league at home in, I think, 4 weeks later. Mm. Getting a team from the same division in the cup draw is a bit dull. What's that no-win game? They're in the top half of the table?
11th.
Yeah, they're probably favourites to win it. I would have liked a non-league team away, or maybe even a League Two club away, maybe at home.
It's often the case, isn't it? When you get to the first round, when you're in the first round of the FA Cup, at this stage, you kind of... it's quite nice, especially AFC Wimbledon, considering your history, to have a non-league club, to go to maybe a different ground that you've been to. However, we're going to look at the positives. Two games against Doncaster at home, 2-0 wins. So the omens are good.
we've got a good chance of getting through. I mean, It's just that you look at that third round and you see, you know, the clubs are coming into it. If we can just get through this one, non-league club away, let's say we get Chichester. You know, they're a bye in the last round. Right. I can't remember who they got now. You get Chichester or you get Maidstone, or again, respect Maidstone, or whether you get Ebbsfleet, which that's the dry one you really wanted. And then you hopefully beat them, you get a third round tie. Can you get Man United away? Can you get Man City away? Because it's money. Right, all we're looking at is money. We're not going to win the FA Cup. We're not going to get the semi-finals. Fifth round last year was great, but you want to make some money out of it. If it's a third round, you can use that money during the January transfer window. If you only get the glamorous draw in the fourth round, like we did this year for West Ham, you've only got 4 days to spend the money. The money probably hasn't even come through. So if you get it in the third round, you've got best part of 4 weeks to spend it on the squad, which could be the difference between staying up and not. So I would get through this one, non-league team away. I've had the same dream about 4 or 5 times. It's really odd. But I'm sitting...
Are we delving into Kevin Boris's dream?
No, this is a good
Crikey.
One. Where I'm sitting behind the goal of a Premier League ground. The team we're playing are playing in red and white. I've had that dream about 4 times. It could be Stoke, could be Southampton... could be Sunderland probably. It's a bit boring.
Well, perhaps it's just Doncaster Sheffield Rovers there in your subconscious, mate.
Oh, maybe. But I've had this about 3 or 4 years. I keep thinking we're going to get a red and white striped team away.
Okay.
It's probably going to be Stoke, isn't it?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes, on that note, we're going to finish because your good friend Dean, I believe, has been in touch. He says, I completely agree with Mr. Boris. Lincoln are the new Wickham, and I think they are going to really struggle now to the end of the season. Brackets, I hope. Little PS, if you want me to play on the show, contact my management. Thank you.
Of course, I've got to get management.
Ah, there we
he
go.
He does, yeah.
Kevin, it's been nothing but a pleasure, boss.
Thank you. Cheers, Matt.
This has been the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. We will be back next Sunday at 8 p.m. with all the reaction from their FA Cup first round clash with Doncaster. See you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.